Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are in paper 53, section 4, which is old single column, page 604. All right, so last time we got through the remaining parts as kind of the preface to the whole issue of the Lucifer Rebellion, and then we actually went through the manifesto. Remember, it has three principles, as we talked about philosophically. 1, 2, 3. They are the nihilistic principle, the anarchistic principle, and the solipsistic principle. And like I said, where I'm kind of extending the use of the word solipsism to use it in a truth mode rather than a simple fact mode. You know, but that idea that you can be a soul self, that you are a whole unto yourself. Even if you don't think you're literally the only self in the universe. So not taking it simplistically, factually like that. And we saw that there was a pattern in the way Lucifer was attempting to validate these principles he was putting forth. He used the time-honored tradition of the conspiracy theory every single time, weaving a more and more elaborate conspiracy theory to supposedly back up all this. And remember, then the other thing that we recognized was that he begins with that solipsism, then descends to anarchism, and then further descends all the way to nihilism, but he doesn't see that as descending. He sees that as reaching an apex of new thought, and so what he sees as the apex, he puts out as item number one. He thinks that's the crowning achievement of his thought, and so he puts that first. But he got to them in reverse order. By the time you get to nihilism, by the time you get to the first principle, things have gotten pretty far astray. But like we could see from what they said before, that section on the manifesto, even going that far, the absurdity hadn't hit him yet, right? He hadn't got a conscious reality response, reductio ad absurdum. He's chugging along, and it hadn't hit him yet till after he'd gone public. And then at some point, it dawned on him one day, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. But he didn't have the courage to back away. And so then he became insincere from that point forward, and that evil became conscious sin. And,
the powers that be recognized that moment when he actually did recognize that he was wrong.
We don't know exactly, how this intellectual assessment, goes, but, I would think that even if they aren't watching it nanosecond by nanosecond, keeping track of his thoughts, they would have a basic idea. Okay, now we can see that he's starting to consciously flip things around. All right, and so with all of this very, very positive desire in his mind, not the least bit of ultimate negative desire in mind. He puts those principles forward, and because they are the very antithesis of reality, when all is said and done. You don't get that positive desire. You get the opposite. You get the orgy of darkness and death. Instead of the dawning of the age of light and life throughout the entire local system, like he envisioned. So you can envision many things. Your spiritual consciousness gives you an imagination. If you have a vast spiritual consciousness like he did, you can have a vast imagination. You can envision sweeping wonders. The universe doesn't care about how wonderful your visions are. Reality just stands there waiting for you to conform to it. And So we've got that. So now we're going to move forward. So once he's got the manifesto out there, how do things play out? They don't give us endless details, but they give us the basics of how things play forward. And this this section that follows the manifesto is a good one to kind of keep in mind to turn back to. As a touchstone for exactly what are the kind of the pithy elements of his fallacies, they're summarized very neatly here in this section. So this is a good touchstone section to recall, and you'll see as we get into the beginning part here, we'll get a lot more of. Oh, wait a minute! That reminds me of. Things that are going on about us today, or that have gone on in recent time on the planet, remember we're looking for that those truths, so we can appreciate how humans have begun to follow this same pathology in their ignorance, because they've got much more spiritual consciousness than they ever had before. We're starting to have enough spiritual consciousness that we can. Play the game in our own minds that Lucifer played in his. Okay. All right, so let's see what they've got here.
Outbreak of the Rebellion. The Lucifer Manifesto was issued at the annual conclave of Satania on the Sea of Glass in the presence of the assembled hosts of Gerasim on the last day of the year, about 200,000 years ago, Urantia time. Satan proclaimed that worship would be accorded the universal forces, physical, intellectual, and spiritual, but that the allegiance could be acknowledged only to the actual and present ruler, Lucifer, the friend of men and angels, and the God of liberty.
Oh boy. All right. So you see, they have a bunch of they're quote unquote, they're giving you an English expression of, some basic element of the thought. So you can quickly scan through these, in this section and get those little pithy nuggets, like I was saying. Okay, just picture this. All right, you've got the annual conclave, right? Everyone, is there. It's that glorious time of the year on Gerasim, when everyone gets filled with spiritual delight, as they get ready to launch yet another yearly cycle of the endless progress towards light and life in the local system, and this is what they get. They get this presentation by Lucifer. So you can just imagine, the people in the audience that aren't gullible. Initially, there's going to be some like shuffling in the seats, and exactly how did that play out? You can just try to imagine. It must have been a very awkward event, as suddenly there's this countless beings that know they're sitting in the middle of a system rebellion beginning.
All of a sudden, the party has.
Yes.
He even sent Satan in to present.
Yeah, and then I was going to, you notice that, just like I mentioned before, that's always the case. Satan is the point man, just like with Caligash and Dalagash, and Dalagash is the point man. It's that lieutenant is the one that really puts the things forward. You know, they're following that pattern of thought, word, action. Lucifer or Caligashia, that's the thought, and then number two is the word, right? That's who actually goes out there and, you know, in many ways and puts it out, puts it into play. And then, you know, the legions are the action, of course. Right, and so like I often point out when I invoke that God of Liberty, you know, it's Satan that's putting that banner over him. And, the couple other very key things in there. You know, remember, even though it's very hard for us to imagine, you know, they're not ignorant of all the higher physics of matter, mind, and spirit like we are. Right? So that fact of worship, right, that synchronizing of the upper domain of the hourglass of your mind, you know, the hourglass analogy of your mind, that synchronizing of the wholeness of that objective domain, at least potentially objective domain, with the cosmos, you know, that's worship, right? I mean, they know that as a physical fact, right, if you will, you know, a natural phenomenon. And so, right, you have to, you acknowledge that. You know, so you're going, Satan proclaimed that worship could be accorded the universal forces, physical, intellectual, and spiritual. And you're going, well, where's the person here? Remember, worship, just worship itself, is not adoration. Right? We're just talking about that synchronizing, that communion, a state of communion with the cosmos. Right? And for them, the cosmos is just this natural presence of the quote-unquote universal forces, threefold, that they know that they are, right? And you're just synchronizing with that. And so, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but there isn't, but they're telling you, but don't think that you somehow put adoration out on that substrate of synchronizing with the cosmos, and that adoration goes to some infinite being somewhere, right? Right. All there is just those universal forces. There isn't a false personification of them. You know, remember they're saying that's a whole, everyone is just personifying these universal forces into infinite beings. And instead, there's just the universal forces.
Anthropomorphizing.
Yeah. Right? We'll get in a little bit, you know, but why they bought it. You know, they'll bring that up. You know, how it is that that message could fly, so just, you know, just note that. And on top of that, the revelators never miss an opportunity to get you to reflect on the literal meanings of words and using those. That worship could be accorded the universal forces. The root of accord is heart. To the heart, yeah, it means literally. Like, yeah, the temple within, the upper domain, the quote-unquote heart, right? You can synchronize the temple within with the cosmos, you know, as it were, in their idea. See, so yeah, they just use that word purposely to stress that it's everything that we think it is, just without the idea that there is an actual whole and an individuality of the whole, that has, you know, the individuality of the whole having a personalization behind it, you know, God the Mother, you know, and through the God, through the Mother, you can get, for instance, to the Father with adoration, right? I mean, none of that's there, right? It's just kept in this completely impersonal way that a lot of materialistic, you know, philosophic materialism people today, you know, may the Force be with you, you know, or something like that, right? Or just, you know, something more scientific. Yep.
Well, this has helped me connect up personality and purpose. more clearly, I think, than ever before. Because you can worship, in a state of worship, have a chord with the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose?
Yeah.
The purpose, there has to be a person.
Right.
If there's no purpose,
there's no purpose to it, right? See, so you've got the nihilistic principle, the first principle, saying that there is no ultimate purpose. And so you see how this, you know, coordinates with that, right? You know, I mean, you know, Lucifer would have had a very, very airtight rationalization scheme, right? And you can appreciate, you know, little nuggets of it like that, that it all fits together in this confused way. Right? You know, your personality, you know, is a spirit pattern that allows you to impose purposing upon your mind. Right? Personality and purposing go together. Yep.
Did Satan buy into this from the very get-go?
No, remember, it mentioned that. Satan wasn't, you know, when Lucifer put this out, Satan didn't just immediately go for it. It took Lucifer a little while. Remember, we pointed out that they used the term month. Right, so.
Did it ever dawn on him? Did he come to the awakening that, holy crap.
We don't know, if Lucifer was the first one to get the recognition. Oops, wait a minute, I'm off base here. Everyone has to go through that same process at some point, either independently or kind of relative to another person. Oops, I just discovered this is wrong. You want to join me in sin? I don't know exactly how that all went, but obviously everyone at some point, if they're going to go from evil to sin, it's got to become a conscious recognition that this is not as it initially appeared, to their minds. All right, so there's that. See, so you've got something as sophisticated for us as worship that's being thought of in just very matter-of-fact fashion, it's just an energy thing, and you synchronize your mind with it, yada, 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 right? Don't make it into something more than it is. You don't have this notion of directing adoration to God the Father, but you do have allegiance could be acknowledged, right, only to the actual and present ruler, not some imaginary ruler or something, right? The actual and present one that you can go up and shake hands with, give a hug to, or whatever. And look how he's described, quote unquote, the friend of men and angels. Right? In other words, he's exactly what you should be sensing. It's like, wait a minute, this feels familiar. We have a name for someone who gets into this shtick. We call him a demagogue, right? He's putting himself forward as the leader of the people. He's one of them. He's a friend to the little people. Men and angels. That's the little people, right? Right. That shtick that a demagogue always uses, right, to try to get, people, right? To try to get the masses caught up, and feeling that they're oppressed by supposed superiors, right? But you're there on eye level with them, and really there is just this plane that we're on, I'll lead you forward against the oppression of those who've falsely put themselves supposedly above us, right? All right, that's the demagogue, quote unquote. He's a friend of men and angels.
It's a lot like Napoleon taking the crown from the Pope and crowning himself. That he doesn't need anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He's
right.
The man.
Right. That whole bit of right. You don't need anyone else. You're trying to ingratiate yourself with the little people, right? And leverage off of that. And then, of course, yes, the quote-unquote God of liberty, as we talked about. That's the the energy that's driving all of this. You know, the word liberty, you know, whatever the heck it is in local universe tongue or whatever, right? But for in English, you know, that word liberty is what's powering this. You know, that powerful spiritual word. And ignorant creatures' efforts to do something with the energy of that thought. You know, what of liberty? What does this mean? How do I apply this? What, you know, what does it demand of me? You know, where do I go with it? I mean, et cetera. You know, it gets everything fired up in the mind. And that's the energy behind this whole thing. All right. Okay, so then this next paragraph is very key. And why don't you not only read it, but that tiny little one after it too. So okay. Those next two little, yeah.
Self-assertion was the battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion. One of his chief arguments was that if self-government was good and right for the Melchizedeks and other groups, it was equally good for all orders of intelligence. He was bold and persistent in the advocacy of the equality of mind and the brotherhood of intelligence. He maintained that all government should be limited to the local planets and their voluntary confederation into the local systems. All other supervision he disallowed. He promised the planetary princes that they should rule the worlds as supreme executives. He denounced the location of legislative activities on the Constellation headquarters and the conduct of judicial affairs on the Universal Capital.
The Universe Capital.
He contended that all these functions of government should be concentrated on the system capitals and proceeded to set up his own legislative assembly and organized his own tribunals under the jurisdiction of Satan, and he directed that the princes on the
apostate
worlds do the same. The entire administrative cabinet of Lucifer went over in a body and were sworn in publicly as the officers of the administration of the new head of the liberated worlds and systems.
Right, so not only do you have the grand conclave here, you know, but, you know, it culminates in the whole administration, right down to the last man, all standing up, raising their hands, and swearing an oath to this glorious new adventure that everyone was going to go on. And you can see, you know, that little quote-unquote there, the liberated worlds and systems. Right, so he had a grand thought here, not just his system, you know, that he wanted, you know, at least to, you know, get all the systems in Norlaciadec going, and, you know, and beyond that. Right, so he has this grand idea that they're going to spread this everywhere, but you know, the Most Highs are not going to let that happen, right? All right, so there's that, and then you know that, and then that whole big paragraph. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there that we want to take a look at. You know, so you see that, you know, that latter part with you know, he wants to take over all the legislative and the judicial activities. Okay, on the one hand, you know, you're, you know, you don't want the whole hierarchy of the local universe. You're going to flatten everything all down to the local system. There's that. But, you know, reflect on this a little bit. I mean, we have this idea of liberty behind all this. But what are we doing? You know, we're talking about all these issues of the outer life. All this legislative activity, the outer life, judicial activity, you know, the administration, all this administrative activity, all this outer life stuff, right? We're not talking about, you know, liberty in the inner life, you know, and acknowledging that and exercising that. We're falsely pushing it outward. So self-assertion was the battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion, It's not about free will. Genuinely, you know, they think it's about free will, but you know, they're forgetting the distinction between the inner life and the outer life. Free will is the inner life, self-assertion about the outer life, and you have sovereignty in the inner life. Free will, right? But assuming that that sovereignty goes out, that's the problem. Right? You don't have sovereignty over the external world. And if you try to establish that sovereignty, that you are going to meet resistance in one way or another, eventually. Right? Because you know, you're not going to be allowed to impose your will upon the external world, you know, unfettered. Yep.
On his legislative cabinet, who made up this cabinet? Were there Melchizedeks involved in this, or?
Oh, we don't know who all is going to be involved in this. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of beings that haven't been revealed to us, you know, for one thing, involved. You know, there's going to be all kinds of angels and, you know, and whatnot.
The
rebellious, you know, material sons and daughters, you know, could be involved in this. And, you know, remember, there's all kinds of Marantia beings that they just hint at, you know, that are on these worlds that they don't, you know, describe. There's going to be all kinds of beings that can be involved in all sorts of, you know, falderal. They can make an occasional error, but not, they can't go to evil, you know, let alone sin and you know, and beyond. So, right. So, but remember, like ascending, you know, beings can be involved in legislative activities and stuff, right? You know, so. That latter part is just a great demonstration of how overboard they've gone with this liberty thing, you know, and blurring the line between free will and self-assertion. Right? You know, self-assertion's the battle cry. See, you might think it's liberty, but see, it's actually self-assertion. You know, that we have a right to assert ourselves upon the external world. Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about what kind of beings made up his administrative cabinet?
I mean, you've got a lot of the administrator seraphim, you know,
angels.
Yeah, you know, involved. Yeah, for one thing, and again, you know, there's going to be a lot of beings that we don't know about and stuff too, right? But we know that much at least. All right, now the other elements here kind of go into the middle of that paragraph, and so let me just read again the. You know, few sentences there, where it's, you know, he maintained that all government should be limited to the local planets and their voluntary confederation into the local systems. All other supervision he disallowed. He promised the planetary princes that they should rule the worlds as supreme executives. Right. That last sentence, right, that promise to the planetary princes, you know, reminds you of what his, what he's envisioning here, right? He wants to just establish a so-called light and life state on all of the inhabited worlds by fiat, right? That's it's when a world gets the light and life, that's when a planetary prince, you know, becomes planetary sovereign, right? And so he's just wanting to go. Skip all the evolutionary steps and just jump right to light and life everywhere by fiat. We're just going to declare it, in existence. Yeah.
Did he disavow any advancement of the evolving mortals or any of the angels?
We'll get to that. That whole bit of disavowing advancement. We're going to get to that here in just a second. You're going, well, how does that make sense? I'm trying to slowly get to the bottom line here. Right? I just want to take you one step at a time at the pieces here. Right, so you have that. That's what he's envisioning. He's envisioning light and life. And he's just going to establish it. You know, planetary sovereigns, for the planetary princes is part of that. You notice that little sentence, all other supervision he disallowed, right? Right. You know, is there not, an anarchistic idea in play here? He's flattening the hierarchy. There's not going to be any above. There's not going to be any supervision, oversight, right? You know, he's rejecting the notion of the vertical dimension of reality and assuming that everything is just a horizontal construct. And then everyone is, you know, is just in a plane. You know, like we said, that's fundamentally his second principle, the anarchistic principle. And that sentence about that first one that I read, he maintained that all government should be limited to the local planets and their voluntary confederation into the local systems. I thought it might be interesting for you to have me just read a dictionary definition of anarchism. So as I read this, kind of look at the words in that sentence. So the dictionary says, anarchism, the theory that all forms of government interfere unjustly with individual liberty and should be replaced by the voluntary association of cooperative groups. Now see, that sentence is basically the dictionary definition of anarchism. Now, the dictionary there said voluntary association. You know, what does it say here? Voluntary confederation, because the Revelators wanted to be a little bit more precise, right? It's not a voluntary federation, right? It's a voluntary confederation, because there is no such thing as a federation if there's no vertical dimension, right? If you flatten everything into the plane, right? A confederation means, the con prefix means you're with what you're going to grasp as the unifying principle. It's not above you. I remember federal, the root is the same as the word faith. So there's no upward faith grasp, and predicated on that which is commonly above everyone, you federate together. This is believing that the unity fact is down in the plane with you. You are the unity you've been looking for, right? And so you confederate, right? That's the precise association, the precise voluntary association, like the dictionary said. Yeah?
Obviously, these planetary princes, certainly Lucifer and Satan, recognize the inferiority of the evolving mortals on these newer planets, and they're going to just all of a sudden become enlightened and go into enlightened life. It's
okay, again, you're insane. You're getting at this inferiority thing. We haven't gotten there yet. Just right. You've got to think about, okay, so how does he do this? Like, so for those in the webinar, he was again, he's puzzling over how can a planetary prince, look at the very limited mortals out in his world and be thinking like this, right? That somehow there's not any sort of a vertical, like even a parent sort of a child verticality or, even, right? How can you think in such horizontal terms like this? Okay, and so, that's where you see those other two highlighted, elements there in the first part of that paragraph. Besides saying, well, self-government's good enough for them, it's good, right? And why, if self-government's good enough for them, it's good enough for us? It's like, everyone should be saying, well, yes, but they're Melchizedek. You're just a Lenonidek, right? no, right? He was bold and persistent in the advocacy of the equality of mind. Okay? And the brotherhood of intelligence. Okay? And in terms of mortals, on a world, just remember that... this came up last time. They're going to be thinking, they take that planetary prince idea. Those planetary administrators know that, that all these mortals are there for just a short time, right? And then they die, and then they're resurrected on the Magian worlds, right? I mean, they don't see those mortals on those worlds as really the reality of them. Like I said, the best analogy is, they see them as the caterpillars, but they know they're really butterflies,
potentially,
right? And in very short order, just a few short years, right, they will be said butterflies on a Magian world, right? And that's the real, fellow being, they're not ignoring development, right? Just remember, the idea of development for them is not limited like it is for us. We think, that once we're 18, well, we're fully developed. Right? Right. No, I mean, Lananadex don't think like that. Right? They know your development, your childlike state or your caterpillar-like state is longer than we think it is. Right? But right, they're not judging you. They're not saying, "Well, I believe that a two-year-old is the same as a Lananadec." They're not saying that, right? But they're saying that a matured creature, regardless of the creature, right, has any quality of mind. Okay, so you just have to add in that little element. All right, but it's that fundamental. Notion, and this a quality of mind, that's basically the third principle again. Right. What you see kind of reiterated in this section is those starting elements that are embodied in the third principle, that that first principle that he got to developmentally, or it's a sequence of his thoughts, going from solipsism to anarchism to nihilism. If I'm whole unto myself and everyone else is whole unto themselves, therefore, right, there's an equal wholeness, there's an equality of mind. Okay. All right, so quote unquote equality of mind is just another way of expressing the third principle. Yeah?
Did he recognize the source of mind as the creative Mother Spirit?
They certainly, understand, that there is this ubiquitous mind energy that everyone is utilizing, right? But again, they treat all those things very prosaically, whereas for us, it's like mystical, magical sorts of stuff, right? But for them, it's no more fancy than the fact that there's dirt everywhere on the ground, under our feet. Right, it's just a completely prosaic, matter-of-fact thing. Right, so, they know the physics of all of it. People in introductory classes learn all the physics of all that sort of stuff. Right, so it's all very matter-of-fact to them. These things that are not so matter-of-fact to us. Okay, so you've got that equality of mind. That's a very biggie to recognize. Think about how humans that have any spiritual consciousness very quickly go there, right? To thinking that's a key thought to put forward, to demand that everyone acknowledge, right? I mean, what's another way of saying equality of mind? That all men are born equal, right? Right. You got that. Lucifer is making that fundamental assumption, setting aside developmental issues. He's making that same fundamental assumption that physically and intellectually everyone is equal. And all creatures are born equal, are brought into an equal existence. If you have equality of mind, if all men are born, all creatures are born equal, quote unquote, obviously a corollary is there's the brotherhood of intelligence. Right? That's just happened. That's an automatic. You know, if there's equality of mind, there's brotherhood of intelligence. It's, you know, there's no additional step to get to that. That's just automatic. Right? You automatically have brotherhood. And again, you know, think about how spiritually conscious people think like that. You recognize the fact that we are kindred spirits, and immediately they want to believe, well, all we have to do is just acknowledge that, and boom, you got the brotherhood of man. No. Because, you know, and it's, you know, it's kindred minds. It's like, oh, well, see, Lucifer is taking that additional step. Right? He's thinking that just as much by, you know, in a single flash of recognition, we can acknowledge that we're kindred spirits. You know, he's saying mind is the same way. Yeah, not only that, you're also kindred minds automatically. Right? No long developmental evolutionary process of trying to synchronize, you know, your mind with the universal harmony. You know, right? It's all just immediate. Okay, so. See, so like I said, this paragraph allows you to really reflect on how much humans are in this same mode right now. And a point that can get you to appreciate just how sneaky this is, how subtle this is, how naturally anyone with spiritual consciousness will go down this same path. Look at the last three, you know, quote unquotes that we've got here. You know, before equality of mind, we had God of liberty. So you have God of liberty, equality of mind, and the brotherhood of intelligence. These three little nuggets in that order. Liberty, equality, brotherhood. Does that remind you of something? Anyone know?
Oh, yeah.
Three words that should ring a bell. He's like, wait a minute, I've heard those three words in that order.
Liberty, equality.
Right.
French Revolution.
Right. The French. Right. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Yeah, liberty, equality, fraternity, you know, or brotherhood. That order. Yeah. And whose declaration has, in the very first part of the very first article of that declaration says, all men are born equal? The French Declaration. Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Right?
Independence Day
in
a couple of days.
Right? See, it's there. It's naturally, automatically there. Right? And it's not that there's something innately bad about liberty, something innately bad about equality or fraternity.
It's those French.
But it's just, see, you're expressing that, and they're fine as themselves, but there can be false relationship with those three powerful words, right? Right. What if you blur the lines between liberty and self-assertion? What if you blur the lines between equality and equity? Right. You know. What if you think that the word equality is not a spirit word, but you think it's a general word? I mean, like for us, it's a material world word, and you're materially equal. Right? Which is just fundamentally silly, you know, because equal is a spirit word, not a material word. It's describing spirit. It's about unity, not individuality. All right, so you see it, it's just right there. That the revelators are very purposely doing that so that you can see, ah, yes. And that's why there's something that feels a little off about what the French did relative to what, you know, Americans did. Right? Now, that differential, which can easily be not noticed.
Damn, Jefferson.
by those who don't think critically, is the whole difference we're talking about here, the difference between created equal and born equal, right? Between, you know, recognizing that the Creator is a spiritual father, not a material father. You're not physically and intellectually equal. You're spiritually equal. You're created equal, not born equal. And the moment that you don't clearly make that distinction is the moment you begin to go right down the path that Lucifer went. And you're thinking, what are three words that really express the feeling I have in my mind? I know it's liberty, equality, and fraternity. Right? It's the God of liberty and the equality of mind and the brotherhood of intelligence. It's the Lucifer rebellion.
There's two quick questions. Winston's asking, so self-assertion is wrong no matter what form in government? Is there an evolutionary process?
No, again, self-assertion is wrong, not wrong. I mean, for instance, I'd starve to death if I couldn't assert myself. I could not get food to go into my pie hole, right? I got to do mind over matter to pick up this cup. I have to assert my mindal self over matter to pick up this cup and take a drink so I don't die of thirst, right? Again, the problem is thinking that liberty thing that you know you have a right to is self-assertion, that you have a right to mind over matter. No, you don't have a right to mind over matter. You have a right to spirit over mind, and only your mind, your mindal self. You have a right to dominate your mindal self, to take a hold of it and master it. You know, it's not only a right, it's a duty. It's your job. The moment that you think that right is about the outer life is the moment things go astray. Right? You know, like thinking that you have a right to live, that you can just do whatever you damn please in the outer life and everyone just has to deal with it. No, if you don't fit into the society, if you're that antisocial, society has a right to kill you. You don't have a right to live. You know, any more than Lucifer is going to have an endless right to roam about and spout his foolishness. Eventually, he's going to be rounded up and stuck in a prison. Yeah. All right. So we have this lack of humility. And how that lack of humility immediately pushes beyond your boundaries. You have sovereignty in this little space that is you. The moment you think that sovereignty extends beyond the boundaries of your mindal self is the moment you've gone astray in your thinking, right? That's the problem. So again, it's what's behind self-assertion. This is true in general. It's, the difference between true and false, whatever. It's what you've got, what thought you've got behind that.
These issues are all
rampantly relevant
throughout our philosophy, throughout our philosophic backgrounds.
Yeah.
So it's right there for the taking.
Right. Just appreciate that the so-called common, conventional wisdom of our day is curiously like these things that are in quotes from the Lucifer Rebellion. Right. That's the so-called conventional wisdom. We think that we've discovered this great enlightened way, the same great enlightened way that Lucifer discovered before he carried it forward logically enough in his mind to go, oops, wait a minute, that's illogical. Okay? And in general, no human has done that yet. They're all still just super excited about this discovery they've made and are certain that if we all just adopt this, it's light and life around the corner. Why would a Urantia book reader, when they read about light and life, think that, ooh, I'll bet you that's soon? Because they've been marinating in the falsehoods of the Lucifer Manifesto since the day they were born. And they read the Revelation, it all seems to be validated, just exactly this conventional wisdom right? Of what, how things are and what we can expect. You know, that if we just declare equality, there is equality.
I think it'll happen about the time we really get equal access fully in play.
Right. You just, you know, that word equal, you know, it's just so, everyone has all these delusional notions about the word equality, right? Or even just take a simple thing, you know, when very troubling things occur in our society, immediately you hear people having, making calls for unity. We all need to, you know, remember unity, as if it somehow, you know, is an actuality. I mean, no. See, again, it's not, you're using the words wrong. Unity is a spirit word. What you're looking for is not unity of individuals. That's nonsensical. Unity is about the continuumness. There is no individuality in continuumness. The word you're looking for is harmony, not unity. If a troubling thing happens in your town, everyone coming together, right, the word that describes that well-functioning system of individuals is harmony, not unity. If you force yourself to recognize that what it is harmony instead of unity, your magical notions will go away. When you call it unity, you don't recognize it, you're thinking magically. You're thinking that if I just think unity, there is harmony. Therefore, harmony and unity are synonyms. Right? No. Right? If I think equality, there is equity, and therefore equity and equality are synonyms. No.
Well, I've been thinking about it today with these confrontations between people and police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an individual being stopped by the police, is that a confrontation among equals or unequals? You know, if you have a healthy respect that it's not equal, that officer
right.
has authority that's above you.
Right.
Things are likely to go well, but if you think it's just a two equals confrontation, it's likely not to go well.
Right. See, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
I have something to add to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you start talking about, you know, someone being above someone being below someone, I don't think that's spot on. I think it's more like recognizing that you have different roles. You have different. Talents, different skills, you're different people, you're just different. What your potential is different. What your faults are is different. You're different people, two different people, different roles relating to each other. How do they relate to each other? Do they recognize that they have different roles? Do they try to harmonize and mesh together and have a healthy relationship? Do they relate well or do they relate poorly?
Mm-hmm.
Do they acknowledge that each other are people, or do they forget their people and put and see them as something instead of a person, and just start, you know, relating poorly because they're not seeing them as a person?
Yeah, right, the equality thought is so problematic, right? It can literally lead to, you know. Death, you know, in a circumstance. If you, you know, I mean, you can't think in terms of everyone in a society has equal rights. You know, because rights are not what you think they are, right? Rights are not something about absolute God's law thing, like people tend to imagine. Right? What we mean by rights is we have a certain mores system that we live within. And that mores system has to acknowledge the differences between individuals, you know. And in certain circumstances, you don't have the same rights as another person, right? I mean, if you think that if you go to a lecture, or let's say, you know, you enroll in a college course, and you think that there's no reason why we can't have a Mori system where in that college classroom, the students have just as much of a right to be speaking as the professor, right? If that's what you believe, because everyone's born equal and everyone has equal rights in all circumstances, in all ways, there's no. Yeah, you have to submit to that situation. In that situation, you don't have an equal right to speak. If you think you do, there can't be a teacher-student interaction, right? It just in endless things, you know, interacting with a police officer, right?
Or a surgeon and a taxi driver.
Right, yeah, I mean, whatever, right? Just any, there's this whole relativity, and it's not some absolutist thing. In a different circumstance, the person that seems to have more rights than the other one, it will be flipped around, right? We have to think, you know, in more sophisticated ways about this. And we definitely have to always be humble. We have to be willing to appear to be lesser, right, in a particular situation, you know. That very unfortunate tendency that got fed into our minds 200,000 years ago when Caligastia joined the Lucifer Rebellion, you know, that basically ultimately gets expressed in common situations today is, you're not the boss of me. The cop says, you know, show me your driver's license. And if your thought is, you're not the boss of me, you know, this could be very problematic.
It comes back up.
You know, it's not, you know, I mean, we've got to temper this. And it all comes from being told that we have a quality of mind. And we don't. We have to acknowledge that. I mean, the Alpheus twins got along well because they recognized that their mind was not equal to Peter and Andrew's and John's thing, right? They could set up, you know, a system of equity. Not a delusional notion of equality. All right, so, obviously we could talk, you know, for hours and hours, you know, about it, because this is what we're trying to recognize, is just how relevant this is. This isn't just a story about something that happened on some world that, you know, we can't even imagine 200,000 years ago, right? The facts were there and then. The truth is here and now, right? Or its companion, falsehood. So it's just, you know, you have to kind of just, you know, be taken aback a little bit when you know, you go, wait a minute, liberty, equality, fraternity, sounds vaguely familiar. Isn't that a carved on a statue somewhere? And it's not the words themselves. It's what notion you have behind that. Is it true or false? There's false liberty, equality, and fraternity. Yeah. Love isn't innately true. Love can also be false. Right? And true love is incredibly beneficial. False love is horrendously destructive. And if to your subjective mind, true and false love feel the same. So if you have no objective oversight of loving, you'll ignorantly be falsely loving. You'll assume that you're truly loving because that's your desire. You know, and if this is my desire, it has to be the reality. No, it could very easily be the opposite and be horrendously destructive to those you are engaging rather than helpful, rather than productive. And if we follow these falsehoods, of the Lucifer Rebellion, ignorantly, blindly, like we are, right? Soon false love will encompass the whole earth, and there'll be another interregnum. It'll devour everything and put everything back in a primitive state. True love is predicated on reality, you know, not our imaginations. Right? You can't just imagine light and life on a world and declare the planetary prince to be planetary sovereign. All right. So that's the, you know, the big meat right there. And then other little thoughts they throw in here.
While there had been two previous rebellions in Nebadon, they were in distant constellations. Lucifer held that these insurrections were unsuccessful because the majority of the intelligences failed to follow their leaders. He contended that majorities rule, that mind is infallible. The freedom allowed him by the universe rulers apparently sustained many of the nefarious contentions. He defied all his superiors, yet they apparently took no note of his doings. He was given a free hand to prosecute his seductive plan without let or hindrance.
You know, without being stopped or delayed, retarded in any way. And that other thing about, you know, it's a seductive plan. Okay? I try to stress that all the time. A fallacy is deceptive. A sophistry is additionally seductive. You know, what's the difference between a fallacy and a sophistry? A sophistry has everything that a fallacy does with the addition that it's seductive. It's seductive because it's the fallacy is wrapped in spiritual candy. Okay? It makes it seductive. Right? They're referring to that right here, to prosecute his seductive plan. It wasn't just a deceptive plan. You know, Satan wasn't just deceived. He was seduced by Lucifer's thoughts. Lucifer just had to play the spiritual candy enough, and he wasn't doing it deceitfully. I mean, you know, Lucifer had gotten seduced by himself by this, right? He wasn't immune to the sophistry of his own making. Right? So he was seduced by it first, and then he proceeded to just, you know, you play it out, and eventually the spiritual candy is just too much. You lose your mind, as it were. You lose your objectivity. You become lost in the eternal delights of the feelings of this, of these spiritual threads that are woven through these ideas, and you just go for it, hook, line, and sinker. It's seductive. Right? You know, words like liberty, equality, and fraternity are seductive. If a demagogue uses those words, he can say anything else, and eventually you'll go for it. You'll rationalize that all that other stuff isn't prickly like it initially appears. Yeah, it can't be. It can't be wrong. I mean, because it's juxtaposed with a sentence that has liberty in it, and equality, and fraternity, which are innately divine, right? That's the game, right? And that's what happens all the time. Now, uncritically thinking, spiritually conscious people, they'll swallow anything. If you throw the word equality in somewhere, they'll accept anything you say, no matter how absurd. If you just throw the word equality in there somewhere, they're that two-dimensional. They're that absent of insight. They can't, you know, go through the word equality and, you know, see what lies behind it. If you just paint the word equality over it, right? If you take the sepulcher and you whitewash it, right? You put white paint on it, that's the spiritual candy, right? You can't penetrate through that whiteness. You hit that whiteness and you just go, you know, traverse, you know, you go lateral with it, you know, and just melt into it. You know, your insight goes away. You don't penetrate through the casing of the sepulcher and see the dead man's bones inside. And that's what these words do. They just melt. If you don't have a rigor of mind, they'll just melt your critical thinking. They'll melt your logical acumen. You know, it all gets spread into the continuumness of unity words like liberty, equality.
Yeah, we have no concept of vocabulary of the meaning of words, such as the word seductive. Mm-hmm. Of course, you immediately think, oh, no, that's not at all what it means.
See, it's, you know, when you say seductive, you're thinking, oh, I'm drawn into it. Yes, what draws you in? It's literal. Spiritual gravity. It's just like falling off a cliff. It's gravity. If you don't resist it, it just sucks you right in. Right? It's a spirit fact. It's a reality. It has a gravity to it. It pulls you in. It will pull you in. I mean, nothing else can happen. Right? You will feel the drawing power. You can't help but be drawn to the word equality. Someone says equality, you'll stop. You'll turn your ear towards it. Right? It has a drawing power. It has a spiritual gravity. Okay. All right. So seductive. And then, you know, the quote unquotes here again. These little nuggets. Again, like I said, I mean, most of them are basically just different ways of thinking about what's the essence of the third principle. Right, this all born equal, equality of mind. Is there something on the webinar first that we should get to, or?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
I was just gonna wondering, what wasn't Michael a fairly present ruler, pretty hard to dismiss as an abstract, you know, figure of that's not local, you know, in Satan's address about, well, Lucifer is our clear and present ruler. What does that tell us about?
Right, we're about to see
okay.
That, you know, even though, you know, an awful lot of people have actually met, you know, the Creator Son of the local universe they're in.
Of course.
He's not constantly, you know, around.
Right.
He tends to be aloof. And that just adds to the whole, yeah, see, he thinks he's better than us. You know, that's why he's aloof like that. You know, his nose is stuck up in the air. He's up in his ivory tower in Salvington, mm-hmm. right, looking down on the peons down here. Yeah. Well, I'm the friend of the peons, of the little people.
Right. He's present there
right?
all the time.
He's present.
Right? He's playing off that. He's leveraging off of that.
Yeah.
Right? That, you know, and like we'll see, you know, just that, you know, how Michael doesn't immediately jump in, you know, like they're saying here. He defied all his superiors, yet they apparently took no note of his doings.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, but majorities rule and mind is infallible. Right? See, I mean, if you have this equality of mind, I just dwell on that for a second. Okay, there's a quality of mind. I mean, what's the immediate thing? Well, okay, therefore, all minds are innately divine. Right? Mind is infallible. Right? You know, that the words error and evil are words of oppressors. There really isn't such a thing. You know, you're telling me that such and so is true and so is untrue. Says who? Who says this is, you know, untrue and this is true?
That's what's happened
today. Right? It's just the way I see things, and all opinions are equally valid. Right? Quality of mind. Right? See, the moment you have a quality of mind, there is no potential negative anymore. Right? Error and evil are not possibilities. And that's why so many spiritually conscious people, you know, on the planet right now have come to that same conclusion. You know, they reject the notions. You know, especially evil, you know, is just some primitive superstitious notion, you know, that's, you know, enlightened people have, you know, should dismiss, because that assumes right and wrong again, primitive superstitious notion.
No,
everything is innately right because there's a quality of mind. Mind is infallible. All minds are innately divine. Yep.
Well, you know, one thing that's missing in this is the personality, let's say it's a sociable, the non-total of it.
Right.
Okay, so this majority's rule and this equality of mind is dismissing the unique personality of each individual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's demeaning.
Yes, right, it is, right? I mean, and you know, that's, okay, for those in the webinar, you're saying it seems like this is all missing the personality thing, the absolute unique personality, that absolute ultimate individuality that's in play, this whole equality of mind. And, right, see, I mean, once you go to nihilism, saying there is no ultimate purpose, right, everything, you know, starts to melt down. When you know that there's an ultimate purpose, those individual expressions of purposing, those individual personalities, are ever challenging themselves to further actualize, trying to go towards that ultimate of purposing that they see themselves as ultimately consecrated to. Consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father. I mean, you take away the perfect will of God the Father and that ultimate purposing, and so you short-circuit that whole thing. And so, you know, I mean, effectively, a distinction between self and personality is lost. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're confusing free will with self-assertion. See? So it's all the same thing, right? Again, that's what you're doing. When you flatten things down, you just have a bunch of mindless selves, really. You don't have personality pattern identified with those mindless selves that you see as ultimately, you know, elevating those selves upward towards the ultimate purpose. I see. That's what I'm saying. You're short-circuiting that. See, so you have all these corollaries. See, that's what I'm saying. There's just all these different things are different corollaries of the same thought. You know, again, like with majority's rule. Again, it's saying the same thing again. Right? If there's equality of mind, right, every opinion is equally valid, right, then it's just a simple mathematical thing. There's no discrimination, you know, of differences, you know, required. I mean, it's just a simple mathematical thing. You know, one more than 50% rules because every point is equally valid.
Right.
Well, that's not the case. You know, it's just like the problem of having every vote count equally. A completely blithering idiot, you know, someone who knows nothing of the fundamental principles that this country is based upon, should their vote count as much as someone who has spent their whole life trying to, you know, recognize the great truths that we're striving for? This could be a problem, right? You know, you're trying to balance that by not establishing a pure democracy, you know, but instead a republic, you know, so that you have representative government, right? You don't have, you know, just this simple majority's rule, a pure democracy, because you know there is an equality of mind. You're hoping you can find a subset of representatives who are of better mind, you know, whose vote should count more than yours.
Establishing hierarchy.
Right. But that's that's recognizing that there's a hierarchy. Right? Now, you know, of course, that's all going to fall apart, you know, if the people that we elect to represent us, you know, are, you know, no better and often worse than the norm of the little people. Right? I mean, you look at some of the people that get elected, it's like, holy mackerel. I mean, do they even have a, you know, a cerebellum?
Heaven's the
pretty mind-boggling, right? Yep.
Without personality, with quality of mind, so almost everyone becomes like an automaton, pretty much. Sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, you can feel this, how everything, all the life seems to be being sucked out of this. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, if you start to believe in just this equality of mind and everything, then what's the difference between that and just assuming that everyone is an automaton, you know?
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. All right, so, yes, you know, there's huge consequences to anarchism, to flattening the picture.
Yeah.
It's not just a governmental issue, right? It's a universal issue. You know, you've just taken...
Orwellian.
Taken the personality and the reality out of everything, the real life out of everything.
Now achievement doesn't mean anything.
It all, right. It all just dies. Yeah, everything just dies, you know. And, So majorities rule, mind is infallible. You often hear me say, you know, he's assuming that mind is innately divine. Yep.
Darkness and death, but the darkness is losing sight of the cosmos.
Yeah.
And the death is like there's no more life.
All right. There's just everyone's dead. Yeah. Yeah. Just dead inside. Yeah.
Orwellian.
All right. Yeah, all right. Okay. Now notice the one little thing that, you know, they keep referring to, you know, previous rebellions, and, you know, it's, they're just referring obviously to the two, you know, like they say, there are two previous rebellions. It's the system rebellions. You know, we know there's been other just single world rebellions, but they're talking about, you know, a similar thing to this system rebellion. You know, they're setting aside the individual world rebellions that may have occurred. All right, I think we got everything there, didn't we? Let's see. Something else? Oh.
Just a quick question. Winston's, this is about the concept of being sucked in or seduced, concept.
Yeah.
Is the sucking in, the seduction, then one chance to make a definitive choice to not be sucked in?
Yeah, I mean, you need to put a bridle on your spiritual consciousness. Because it will be drawn to things. And you need to have a hold of the, you know, the reins. And you got to pull back. You can't just let it be sucked towards, you know, every spirit word out there.
Reflective thinking.
Right? Unbridled spiritual consciousness is a very problematic thing. Right? Just, and so notice, you know, just start being aware of that. Oh, I feel spiritual gravity there. I'm being drawn towards that thought. Okay, let me pull back. Okay, I got to be careful here. It's very likely it's a sophistry, right? On this benighted world, how likely it is that you don't need to be discriminating about this thing you're being drawn towards, right? Is there something out there that you can just turn your mind off and go with it? No, if there was, we wouldn't have this book in our lap.
Looks
probably don't want to just go with it. Yeah.
I'm going. It looks good. I'm going with it.
It's pretty much guaranteed it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, the likelihood that it isn't is just, you know, it's so minuscule that it's not even worth considering. You should always assume that this is not as it appears. Really, it's probably the opposite of what it appears, and you need to pull back on the reins right away. Don't let yourself get sucked into it, because it's a geometric thing, right? You'll go a long ways before you know what's happened to you. You know, and it's very easy to get that swirling inside of you. What you were being drawn towards, and it can be very hard to pull out. I mean, look how hard it was for all these rebels to pull back, right? Especially if you got sucked in and really got excited and started blogging. And now there's thousands of people all over the planet, you know, that are avid followers of your thoughts. And,
I've got 4,000 friends and 10,000 likes, and what am I going
to do? Right. Well, you have the courage to say, wow, everything I've been saying is complete lunacy.
Just kidding.
I'll give you back all the money you've donated to my cause. Let's get some more here.
All the merciful delays of justice, Lucifer pointed to as evidence of the inability of the government of the Paradise Sons to stop the rebellion. He would openly defy and arrogantly challenge Michael, Emmanuel, and the Ancients of Days, and then point to the fact that no action ensued as positive evidence of the impotency of the universe and the super universe governments.
Yep. See, they're all impotent. I can say and do anything. It's like, no, that delay is called mercy. That buffer. right. I mean, there's a buffer between you and absolute law, which is in eternity. It's called time. But eventually, time comes face to face with eternity. Right? Eventually, you become face to face with absolute law. Don't mistake the existence of time as the absence of eternity. You know, the existence of that buffer is the absence of absolute law. That's kind of in the same spirit. You know, a lot of his conspiracy stuff. You know, that we saw. You know, he was constantly taking something and playing falsely off of it. You can always take something that's positive and rationalize it as if it was negative. You know, and convince other people that it's negative. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's openly arrogant, and I'm having a hard time even putting in my mind the idea of Michael or Emmanuel exhibiting arrogance.
And you can see when he's openly defying and arrogantly challenging. Okay, he must have gone over the line here now.
Oh yeah.
You know. This isn't just ignorance here and confusion, right? He appears to be in sin mode here now and moving rapidly to where things, it doesn't take long when you begin to consciously choose that which you know to be wrong. You stick with it for just a little while, and things literally flip in your mind. What used to look like white will look like black. You know, initially. You know, white looks like white, black looks like black, but you're picking it because you know it's black, right? But after a little while, it literally flips, and black looks white. And so now you think you're doing what's good, what appears to be good, but actually it's bad. You know, but you can't see it anymore. You've flipped it in your mind.
Is that cosmic insanity?
Right. I mean, that's cosmic insanity. See, when you get it flipped like that, when it literally appears to be the opposite of what it is. You know, it's not, you don't see things properly and are just, you know, selfishly picking what you know is wrong. It all appears, you know, is to be good. You appear to be going about doing good. But you're doing the opposite. Let's keep going here.
Gabriel was personally present throughout all these disloyal proceedings and only announced that he would, in due time, speak for Michael and that all beings would be left free and unmolested for their choice, that the government of the sons for the father desired only that loyalty and devotion, which was voluntary and wholehearted, and sophistry proof.
Okay, you know I refer to that one frequently. Right, so Gabriel is there, but keeping his powder dry. and noticing, okay, there's lots of decisions that are being made, but they're reminding you right there. I mean, ultimately, there's a choice being made. This is not just about time. This is about eternity. Right? This is about going all the way to eternity and to the binary, you know, state there, you know, where it's everything or nothing. After all, the first principle is nihilism, nothingism. Right? Choices are relative to eternity. As they're reminding you of that, that the fullness is in play. And now, you know, when I refer to this all the time, I paraphrase this quote-unquote thing here. I often say it's something like, you know, they come up to Gabriel and say, Gabriel, why don't you step in here? And he says, well, we're not interested in those who aren't sophistry proof because they're not real. And you're going, well, Chris, it doesn't say that, does it? No, let's reflect on it. Okay, what is that last thing? There's three things there: voluntary, wholehearted, and sophistry proof. All right, voluntary. What's the root word there? Volition. Okay.
Self-choice.
All right. Wholehearted, volitional. All right. You know, wholehearted. You know, free will state of mind here. Okay, we're talking about reality. Right, talking about it being real. I mean, that's the whole point. Another way of looking at what he's saying there is the way I paraphrase it all the time. We're not interested in those who aren't sophistry proof because they're not real. Right? I mean, if you're not soft, you know, see to be, you have this binary state. Like I said, because it's. You know, ultimately, you're taking this all the way to the binary fact of absolute law. Okay, and so if you are, you know, genuinely volitional, if this is of the free will, and wholehearted, right, it's either you're going to be sophistry proof, or hopelessly, credulous. Right, and that's what I'm trying to get at. I mean, ultimately, if you're not sophistry proof, you're not real. Right? I mean, if you're genuinely, if to be real is to be directly related to eternity, okay. If you're related, genuinely related to eternity in a full volitional, wholehearted way, okay. I mean, you're sophistry proof. Right, and if not, you're not sophistry proof. I see. So. That, you know, the Gabriel is basically reminding everyone that, again, don't think that just because there's time, there's not eternity. And ultimately, you have to acknowledge the absoluteness of eternity. Right? That there is only two options. You're either wholly with it or wholly not. And there's no in between. Half-hearted doesn't have any place in eternity. You're either all there or absolutely not there.
You couldn't even
have. Oh, okay.
No, you couldn't have an experiential domain without this time buffer to modulate that. You know, otherwise immediate and definitive.
That immediate grip of absolute law, right? That, you know, to see that, right? Yeah. I mean, like when we say we're created. Equal. Again, when you hear that word created, do you think in false terms about that word? You know, that at some point in time, there was a magic man that waved a magic wand and created you at a point in time? No. Right? Evolution is creativity in time. Right? Right? That we are created equal. The only way you can understand that is if you get rid of time. You have to spread it over the full span of time. Right? It's like, well, then I'm getting rid of all of the material change. Yeah. It's a spiritual issue. It's the continuumness. Right? You're created equal. Right? It doesn't have anything to do with a point in time. When you say you're created like that.
Yeah, I know we've talked in the past, in some universes, this would never have been tolerated for more than a nanosecond.
Yeah.
It would have been terminated, bango.
Yep.
But Michael, having a threefold character, for lack of a better word, allowed it to play out. Of course, I look at this as a marvel of what results from it, as we've just discussed. But the other universes, many of the other universes never would have been allowed.
Yeah. For those of you in the webinar, he's talking about this issue. We'll see it come up here a little bit too as we go forward. First of all, in the super universe of Orvinton, mercy's a big deal, and that's logical because remember the seventh scheme is the big deal here, the ascension scheme, right? Obviously, you've got to have a lot of mercy for an ascension scheme, right? And then just our local universe, you've got this, greater play of mercy, in the process, less immediacy of the capital J judges, right? I mean, our Creator Son is buffering us from the Ancients of Days more than other local universes. Other local universes are more directly exposed to the Ancients of Days influence. Right? And so things, there's no foolishness. Some local universes, it would be very, very, and then we imagine, and what if we went outside of Orvinton? What if you went to some other super universe? Man, there are probably some local universes and say maybe the first super universe where this could be a very tightly run ship, where there hasn't been anyone who's even, blinked wrong. in that local universe.
Quite fortunate in having this sort of latitude.
We're fortunate, but that's a double-edged sword.
Of course, but.
You have to have the courage to accept that fortunateness, when it leads to rebellion, and you get to live on a benighted sphere, right? Got to remind yourself, I'm fortunate to have born in on a rebellion world and a rebellion system. And it'd be hard to convince yourself of that sometimes. All right, so that's, so you see how, you just have all of these really kind of biggies that you can go back to appreciate the fundamental truths that are in play with the Lucifer Rebellion. Fallacies, that stem from the word equality, are a biggie. And then these sobering reminders that, yes, there's mercy, yes, there's time, but, right, ultimately, eternity is eternity and it's changeless. And you either are absolutely conforming to it or not. And there's no in between.
Yeah.
All right, so, There even down in time, there are points of that. Your fundamental relationship to eternity isn't finalized until you fuse with your thought adjuster. Right? That's the factualization of you definitively and immutably taking a hold of eternity. It's literalized by you gluing to, bonding surficially with that adjuster. And so now, the fact that you are, immutably connected to eternity is just right there. Yep, there's no solvent that will dissolve this bond between me and the adjuster. You know, you can sort of like literally feel the fact that you're connected to eternity. It's, you're not, you know, you're not fooling yourself.
Lucifer also nixed that possibility.
What was that?
Lucifer also nixed that possibility.
Right. Yeah. Well, he knows there's fusion and everything. I mean, he watches that happen all the time. But again, you know, he's gonna think all that's just natural. You know, I mean, these things aren't father fragments, right? Any more than, you know, a ubiquitous spirit presence is the spirit presence of the eternal Son. Right? All this stuff is just naturally there. Right? Personality doesn't come from the Father. You just have that person. It's just in the water, as it were. You know,
sounds more like a rash.
You're just believing that everything is just sort of, you know, we're just bathing in everything, right? And it's just there, right? You're throwing away that whole source idea. All right. Okay, let's get the last one in here.
Lucifer was permitted fully to establish and thoroughly to organize his rebel government before Gabriel made any effort to contest the right of secession or to counterwork the rebel propaganda. But the Constellation Fathers immediately confined the action of these disloyal personalities to the system of Satania. Nevertheless, this period of delay was a time of great trial and testing to the loyal beings of all Satania. All was chaotic for a few years, and there was great confusion on the mansion worlds.
Yeah, okay, so just, you know, three little points there. So much for the systems plural, right, in Lucifer's grand notion, like we saw there, you know, instantly the Most High's clamp it down. It's not going outside of this system. And you notice their very purposeful choice of words there. All was chaotic. Chaos is the Greek opposite of what word?
Order.
Order, or what's the Greek word? Cosmos.
Cosmos, yeah.
Cosmos and chaos are opposites, right? All was chaotic. All was not cosmos. All was not synchronized with the cosmos, right? All was chaotic. For a few years, right? You know, the sort of the Greek, you know, origin of everything theory. You know, is in the beginning there was chaos, and then out of chaos came cosmos, came order.
What actions would they confine it? Cut the communication.
I mean, basically, cut the communication lines, and you know, and some other. You know, energy circuits and stuff that, you know, we really don't know anything about, but
no internet for Satania.
I mean, you know, they can still travel.
And Lucifer, why didn't they just establish their own?
Again, because, you know, we'll see that. I mean, you know, Lucifer can say he's in charge, but none of the power beings are going to listen to anything he says, right? Including the spirit controllers, you know, that are unrevealed, basically, you know, that are in basic charge of those communication circuits. The spirit controllers just take away the line of spirit energy, right? And you still have the physical line, but there's no super additive mindal line, you know, that you can communicate through there anymore. And
boy, they had to strip his gears pretty good.
Right, so just instantaneously, boom, you know, they're cut off.
They're not acknowledging me at all.
Yep. You know, and they can try to order them about, and no. A master physical controller doesn't care less about some silly Lenana deck. All right. And then that last thing. I refer to this often. You know, we did when we went through the mansion worlds. It came up several times. And there was great confusion on the mansion worlds. Right? Especially, you know, on those first two mansion worlds. All right, those first two, you know, it must have been horrible. I mean, the number of ascenders that must have gone to iniquity on those first two mansion worlds. The orgy of darkness and death, right? You would have really seen it on those first two mansion worlds, I'm sure. All right, so that's, you know, great confusion. You know, and we're not just talking, oh, well, he's just a little confused, you know, and, you know, no. You know, we're talking about eternity here. Yes? No. Right? All right, let's get into the nature of the conflict here.
Nature of the conflict. Upon the outbreak of the Satania rebellion, Michael took counsel of his paradise brother, Emmanuel. Following this momentous conference, Michael announced that he would pursue the same policy which had characterized his dealings with similar upheavals in the past, an attitude of non-interference.
Right, so, yeah, we've already kind of talked about that. They're officially laying that out there for us. Right, so he's just going to stay apart. And Lucifer is going to play off of that. See, you know, he's all blow and no go. We can do anything we damn well please. And everyone would say, yep, damnation is the operative word there. But you know, Michael, you know, needs to talk to Emmanuel because, you know, he's not sovereign yet. All right, and this is definite Ancients of Days, you know, issue. Okay, the Ancients, you know, capital J judges are in play here, so they're representative. Emmanuel is right there, so he's getting himself synchronized with, he's buffering the Ancients of Days, you know, to a certain degree, like we're talking, but okay, eventually here. You know, they're going to be acting quite directly. Executioners are going to show up eventually and this sorts of thing, yeah.
What bestowal would Michael have been on during this era? Is that known?
Well, we're 200,000 years ago, you know. So, you know, we're... remember, he's got a billion years that those are spread out over.
Yeah. Post 6 and pre-7.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Warming up for the 7th.
Yep, warming up for the 7th, yes.
Yep. You know, Michael's a person, even though he's a god, this is his universe, and things have gone horribly wrong. So that's got to hurt. And then, so he takes counsel.
Well, you know, things have gone horribly wrong, and it's got to hurt, like you're saying. Well, you know, yes, but of course, you know, he knew completely when he set things up this way that there were going to be, you know, sweeping rebellions. You don't do this hands-off sort of leadership and not have things go squirrely occasionally.
That's why he gets the big bucks.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay. So this attitude of non-interference. Yep.
At the time of this rebellion and the two which preceded it, there was no absolute and personal sovereign authority in the universe of Nebadon. Michael ruled by divine right as vicegerent of the Universal Father, but not yet in his own personal right. He had not completed his bestowal career. He had not yet been vested with all power in heaven and on earth.
You know, the quote-unquote there is, you know, that's the way the Bible relates when Jesus, you know, referred to him, you know, becoming a master son. And so they're just, you know, using that expression, saying, yes, indeed, that's what he's talking about, becoming a master son. Okay, and notice the key issue here. It's a sovereignty issue. Right? There technically isn't sovereignty in the external world of Nebadon. Right? So it's kind of natural when you think about it. You know, you got this internal sovereignty of free will. It's like, well, why not put it out there as self-assertion? Why not extrapolate that to the external world? That's playing into this. There's an unfilled space there that Lucifer is saying we should move into with our sovereignty. What was that? Right.
To say the least.
Yeah, right. demagogues are opportunistic. Right? I mean, like we were seeing, he's playing off of everything. It's like, oh, I can use that to my advantage. You know, he's leveraging off of everything very opportunistically. Right, so, and you got that overarching thing that he's leveraging off of. You know, everyone knows that there isn't any sovereignty out there, so we can plant our flag. All right. Let's see. I think we. I guess let's keep going.
From the outbreak of rebellion to the day of his enthronement as sovereign ruler of Nebadon, Michael never interfered with the rebel forces of Lucifer. They were allowed to run a free course for almost 200,000 years of Urantia time. Christ Michael now has ample power and authority to deal promptly, even simultaneously,
summarily,
with such outbreaks of disloyalty. But we doubt that his sovereign authority would lead him to act differently if another such upheaval should occur.
Yeah, so not only promptly, but even summarily. In other words, you know, some means above, right? So, I mean, you know, instead of staying down there and going through all the protocol, right, he can just put himself above and just, you know, usurp all of that and say, okay, boom. Skip all of the normal routines, all normal steps, just boom. Right, because he has supreme deity, right? Now, and you know, he can function in that supreme mode if he chooses. He can function from above if he so chooses. Function summarily. Remember, we often refer to such and so has been in place since Pentecost. You know, we use that as shorthand. I mean, quote unquote, Pentecost is not just about this planet. But, you know, that marks when he became a master son, right? That's what they're referring to, you know, from 200,000 years ago up until Pentecost, right? And you remember at Pentecost, Lucifer gets rounded up, you know, a number of things happened, right? So, but until then, you know, nothing, you know, no one was putting on the prison worlds, you know, nothing. Until Pentecost, everything was just completely unfettered still. Yeah, so, you know, very, very recently. Right.
Since Michael elected to remain aloof from the actual warfare of the Lucifer rebellion, Gabriel called his personal staff together on Audientia and, in council with the Most Highs, elected to assume command of the loyal hosts of Satania. Michael remained on Salvington while Gabriel proceeded to Gerasim and establishing himself on the sphere dedicated to the Father, the same universal Father whose personality Lucifer and Satan had questioned in the presence of the foregathered hosts of loyal personalities. He displayed the banner of Michael, the material emblem of the Trinity government of all creation, the three azure blue concentric circles on a white background.
Okay. Okay, so you see, you know, they actually use the word aloof there, right? He elected to remain aloof. Lucifer plays off of that. And notice something that, you know, might really strike you. Okay, so Michael decides he's just going to stay on Salvington, you know, but does he get together with Gabriel and say, okay, Gabriel, I'm going to stay here and I want you to do X, Y, and Z? No. Gabriel's just going, well, okay, if Michael's not going to do anything, I don't know, should I not do something? Or, you know, I don't know. Well, I think I'm going to do something. See, notice the liberty here, right? Right? Michael, you know, is stepping back and just letting it play out. And that's not just with the lowly beings. It's all the way up to Gabriel. Everyone has got to make choices, react to this as they see best. and it all plays out.
Right?
Gabriel decides, well, I think I'm going to get together with the Most Highs, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? All right, so he's not ordered to do all these things that he does. Those are his free will choices. Okay? Now, that might feel a little bit disconcerting, if you, you know, when you think of, well, heaven is this place where everything is all pinned, nailed down. No, it's a free will domain. Everyone respects free will. Michael respects free will. He doesn't tell Gabriel what to do. All right. Okay, and remember, you've got Gerasim in the middle, and you've got the seven primary satellites around Gerasim. The seventh one is the Father's world. That's the world we're talking about here. So, you know, normally, you know, there aren't dwellings, permanent dwellings there on the Father's world. There's the temple, you know, to the Father there. They don't really explain what else all is there. But so he's setting up camp on the Father's world, you know, and then they're going to use the sub-satellites, the seven sub-satellites around the Father's world, you know, eventually for the prison worlds. And so that eventuality, see, is kind of in play here now that he sets up camp on the Father's world. Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, and then, of course, we've got the so-called Banner of Michael. And, you know, you want to keep this in context. You know, think about the other things they say about the three concentric circle banner. I mean, this is our local system's symbol for the Trinity government of the super universe. You know, so don't think about this as a too sweeping of a thing. It's a very local sort of a thing. You know, and
exclusive
it,
to the system.
Yeah, yeah. It's the symbol in this system. Yeah, you know, for the Trinity government. Can't remember another place. You know, search for the places they talk about the concentric circles. You'll find that one where they mention that. But remember what's fundamentally going on here. What, you know, is not appreciated in general. This is not the government of the Father, the Son, and the Spirit we're talking about here.
Trinity.
We're talking about the fourth fact, right? You know, this quote unquote banner of Michael. In what sense is this the banner of Michael? This is a reminder that everyone, including the Universal Father, puts himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. You're putting up that banner as just a little unspoken reminder of the fact that what flies above you on the flagpole that you look up to, right, is the Paradise Trinity. Everyone is in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, including the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. We're all underneath that fact. And you know, that's the statement that's being made. Where is everyone's humility here? Right? Everyone, including the Universal Father, humbles himself to the Paradise Trinity.
I'm thinking Lucifer chose the center of Satania, the mount on Gerasim, to assert his authority. And Gabriel is, like you said, setting up camp on
yep.
the satellite.
Yep.
So there's an asymmetry.
Yep.
But the Trinity, that can be done anywhere. That doesn't need
yeah.
a authoritative center to be to assert.
Yes.
There is an assertion here.
Right.
But it's
Yes.
Have to be at the center of things.
Yes, yes. So good point for those in the webinar. Gene is bringing up that, you know, Lucifer is exalting himself on Gerasim, you know, and Gabriel, you know, seems to put himself in a lesser geographic location on one of the satellites. But yeah, again, the Paradise Trinity is the whole, right? And just a little reminder, it may appear to you that you have put yourself on the mount above me. But no. From the perspective of the whole, what's up and what's down? And, you know, I mean, yeah, so, you know, that those sorts of kind of immature self-exaltations, you know, I'm literally greater because I built my house on the hilltop, you know, and yours is not on the hilltop. I mean, such, you know, juvenile thinking like that. Little reminder, no, the Paradise Trinity, you know, is the ceiling. And relative to that absolute ceiling, the difference between you on the hilltop and the ceiling and the difference from me in the valley and the ceiling is a difference of no consequence. Because infinity minus that difference in elevation is nothing, right? Yeah, that, you know, it's, again, it's a reminder of, you know, of that great equalizer. Yeah, yeah.
The same point for the Archangel Circuit being headquartered here.
Yeah.
You know, wow, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What did that put you in the hierarchy of things?
Yeah, for those of you in the webinar, if you didn't hear that, he's mentioning, yeah, another thing that, you know, seemed to have come down and yet obviously didn't is the Archangel Divisional Headquarters being here instead of, you know, up on Salvington Worlds. Yeah. Okay. So there, you know, and then, you know, and again, remember it's the, you know, it's the Paradise Trinity. You know, it's the infinity, eternality and universality, you know, of the Paradise Trinity.
One more time.
You know, I mean, you know, you got the three, you know, that, you know, that you've got infinite, you've got eternal, and you've got universal. Right? All right, so that completeness of the Trinity. All right, and then they throw in just one little quickie. Let's see if, just say that, and we'll talk about that for a second.
The Lucifer emblem was a banner with white, a banner of white, with one red circle, in the center of which a black solid circle appeared.
And that's it. Just one little statement with no explanation, and you're left, well, what the heck does this what does this symbolize? Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you can see it's obviously not, seems to be referring to the Trinity, yeah, because you know that's, you know, he's fundamentally rejecting the Trinity government. It's got a white background, you know, but you're going, well, okay, red, black. I mean, well, what do red and black mean to them? You know, and of course, you know, what do even colors mean to, you know, beings that don't have material eyes like me? You know, you're left to be with a bit of confusion about exactly what you're supposed to do with this.
It's not as beautiful.
Right, when we, you know, when we say it's like, ooh, like, you know, the evil of red and black. You know, it seems foreboding and dark to us. You know, it seems to have some sense of there's something, you know, about which everything, you know, is centered. You know, that there's, you know, maybe the red circuit is the confederation, you know, about the God of Liberty in the center or something. I don't know. I mean, but it, you know, what exactly this twofold symbology is, I'm not quite sure. But it must be something symbolizing this confederating idea in contrast to the Trinity government. You know, see, I mean, they kind of set that up. You know, he said, no, not no Trinity government, we're going to do this. So it must be that in some way, but I don't know.
Maybe it's a real black hole.
Yeah, right. It says darkness and blood to us, and seems pretty foreboding. But yeah, remember, even amongst our world cultures, we think, ooh, black, bad, you know, like black hat, white hat, you know, but some cultures, black is a very positive color. Yeah, so.
Oh, look at the Nazi flag.
Of course, you know, but, you know, what about a black wedding dress in some cultures?
Like the United States, the turn of the century, way back in, you know, 1901 or something. They might have a black wedding dress. Back then, that was, you know, symbol for joy. Not a white one. That was something you would wear like a death wrap.
I missed that one.
Right. See, so just think about that. In the span of just a few, you know, a few decades on, you know, in one culture, you know, the sense of black and white flip, mm-hmm. right? White means death, and black means joy. And now we do it the other way around. Mm-hmm. I see. So again, I mean, you know, everyone needs to, you know, be reminded about, you know, how circumscribed your subjective relationship to some of this stuff can be. You know, do you even span a couple hundred years in your nation, let alone, you know, the whole planet over several centuries, let alone over the whole local system, let alone, yeah. I mean, think about how circumscribed your thoughts are about some of this stuff. So you got to be really careful about just, you know, responding in these very circumscribed, subjective ways to these things.
But Chris, for him to choose those colors must have had a kind of bad connotation.
No. Again, they would have chosen those colors because they would be profoundly positive.
Right.
Yes, that's, remember, again.
Yeah, but he was getting pretty bad.
No. I mean, no, he's putting that forward right away. You know, he would have planned that out from the beginning. You know, this is going to be our symbol. And, you know, it somehow is a symbol of this adoption of our true liberty, you know, and the manifestation of light and life in the system. That's what that symbol's got to mean some way. Right? So again, you got to let go of all of our silly devil notions, you know, where you think of them as this being that's innately evil and, you know, no. Lucifer is a being who has fallen in love with the thought of light and life and yearns for the beauty of it, you know, is impatient, doesn't want to wait for it, just like every other spiritually conscious person on this planet. Which spiritually conscious person wants to wait for light and life? And what do they want, light and life, and when do they want it? Now. Right? And they sing songs about, you know, if we all just, you know, imagine it, you know, it'll be here tomorrow, and right. That's the way Lucifer thought, just like everyone on this planet thinks about light and life. All right.
There was war in heaven. Michael's commander and his angels fought against the dragon, Lucifer, Satan, and the apostate princes. And the dragon and his rebellious angels fought but prevailed not. This war of heaven,
war in heaven,
was not a physical battle, as such a conflict might be conceived on Urantia. In the early days of the struggle, Lucifer held forth continuously in the planetary amphitheater. Gabriel conducted an unceasing exposure of the rebel sophistries from his headquarters taken up near at hand. The various personalities present on the sphere who were in doubt as to their attitude would journey back and forth between these discussions until they arrived at a final decision.
Okay, so it starts out with that quote from, you know, obviously from the book of Revelation, you know, in the Bible. And like they've said, they're going to, you know, say your symbol of the dragon, you know, just as for all of the rebel individuals. You know, remember apostate, just is a kind of another word for rebel. And so this, again, like I was just saying, we have all of these very material-oriented, anthropomorphic, you know, notions about the war in heaven and about the rebel beings and their desires and whatnot. But, you know, this is not a physical or even a energy, you know, expand, you know, some sort of an energy war, right? This is a philosophic war, right? There are two alternate philosophies being professed. And again, Gabriel lets Lucifer have the amphitheater. And he just sets up a little, you know, a little stage, you know, off to the side somewhere, right? And, you know, lets Lucifer have the grandeur and glory of it all happening, echoing throughout the amphitheater, you know, and, you know, he's got a little, you know.
Five black.
Yeah. Bullhorn that he's talking through or whatever, you know, over here on the side.
I bet he was waiting for people to come and ask him good questions.
Right, right.
And I bet he wasn't.
Right, he's not pushing himself forward. He's just standing there and waiting for someone to ask him a question. He's not going to answer any questions that aren't being asked. Yep, see, so the contrast. Humility, and maybe not humility, all right? Maybe pride. Okay, he's trying to show the contrast. Okay, you know, so you have this philosophy. You know, on the one hand, you have Gabriel talking about God the sevenfold. And on the other hand, you have Lucifer talking about the God of liberty. that's the contrast, and it's a philosophic war. It's obviously not a material or energy sort of a war, and it's not a religious war either. It's not a religious war. It's a philosophic war, right? And it's only now that humans have any potential to have rudimentary philosophic thoughts where they can join this philosophic struggle, either positively or negatively.
Are you assuming that?
Uh-huh.
Little encampment.
Yeah.
But he does have the three circles. Yeah. Right above it.
It's got the subtle little three concentric circles there. Yeah, flying there.
Wasn't going to go by ostentatious appearances.
Yep. All right, so, so just, you know, try to, you know, they're purposely giving you that contrast of, you know, reminding you of the book of Revelation. It's like, okay, now don't go off into that whole foolishness, you know, of that fairy tale. But there's a truth there. And now just, you know, think about the real struggle here. What's really going on and is still going on. And again, it's about sophistries, right? He's trying to expose sophistry. He's trying to get people, no, use your insight. Penetrate through the beautiful coating. Don't melt into it. Yeah. Stay integrous. Penetrate through it. Right? See the fallacy inside. Okay.
But this war in heaven was very terrible and very real. While displaying none of the barbarities so characteristic of physical warfare on the immature worlds, this conflict was far more deadly. Material life is in jeopardy in material combat, but the war in heaven was fought in terms of life eternal.
Yeah, like I've been stressing. Yeah. So, yeah. So again, we're talking about eternity or oblivion. Divinity or iniquity. The binary issue is being put into play. Choose this day. You know, and so we'll keep going with that next time. More details about how it played out. How long it was that this. You know, things, people were going back and forth until they made final decisions. How long did it take all these beings to make final decisions? And
it's still going on, isn't it?
Not on Gerasim.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going on in some of the rebel worlds, but but on Gerasim it was over in fairly short fashion.
Yeah.
You know, with
aftershocks.
With this kind of definitive instruction, everyone could get clear on it in relatively a short span of time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's going on here because we don't have anyone, you know, really laying it out for us, you know.
And now they have experience.
What was that?
And now they have experience because it happened.
Right. I mean, and the whole point, this is an experiential domain. And all these people are going through this experience. Everyone has to experience these stimuli, experience how they respond to that, objectively assessing whether that's a valid response or not, altering their response if that's an inappropriate response. I mean, it's an experiential, interactive phenomenon, and everyone's going through it. Yep. All right, so, so it's very terrible, very real. I mean, again, stop worrying about your physical death. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
All right? Worry about the real issue here. Are you doing something concerning your real life? Not this fleeting, material life, as a parent life. Store up your treasures in heaven, not on earth. And if you work on that, when this comes into play, as it will, we're coming face to face. The outer life is starting to have the rebellion in it.
Yeah.
Like it was in the outer life on Gerizim 200,000 years ago. Right? So it's in play. You're being stimulated by it. You need to properly respond to that stimulus. It's a spiritual stimulus. Okay? And are you just going to assume, well, all spiritual stimuli are innately divine? And I'll just, matter of fact, I'm not just going to let go of the reins. I'm going to take the bridle off.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what's in play.
Liberty. That's liberty.
Yep.
Without revelation, that's a tough battle.
Right. But again, we're not interested in those who aren't sophistry proof because they're not real. Sounds harsh, doesn't it?
Says the squeaky 9-volt mechanism.
Absolute
with the circles on.
Absolute law is harsh. Absolute law is harsh. Right? You gotta come face to that. I mean, you need to be sophistry proof. You're not gonna get out of the local system if you're not sophistry proof. That's why the Most High is immediately clamped down.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So we'll pick it up next time here with a great story about one of the angels standing fast in the midst of this. All right, let's take a moment here, everyone.